Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is David Matsuda, Administrator of the U.S. Maritime Administration. Dave, given the significant fiscal and economic pressures the country is facing, DOT leadership has embarked on a department-wide cost-cutting effort. Would you tell us more about your efforts to cut costs and realize savings? What are some of the key initiatives being pursued within your agency to achieve cost reductions?
Well, one of the ways that we've looked at our programs and our budget is to say, what resources do we need right now to do the job? We try not to stockpile funds, or there may be other better uses for them in the federal government. We've identified a number of cost-saving opportunities in the way that we manage our fleet. For instance, I don't think I've talked about that yet, but we do manage for the military a large fleet of cargo ships around the country, about 48 of them currently. And we go out and hire commercial ship operators to manage the vessels, to crew them, to maintain them, and to keep them ready if the military would ever need them. These ships are usually ready within, you know, a few days, whereas if you go out to the ships that are operating commercially under the Maritime Security Program, sometimes it'll take a little while to pull those ships out of service and make them available to the military. So this is kind of a surge, a standby fleet that can be ready to assist the military upon a fairly short notice. And we've worked very closely with them to achieve cost savings. I know a few years ago, there was a decision to transfer a number of ships from the Navy over to us for commercial management. And that's resulted in a large savings, you know, millions of dollars per year. And we're continuing to provide that. And we'll continue to look for those opportunities wherever we can.
You did mention your strong environmental stewardship focus of your agency, particularly with the disposal of old vessels. What are the pressing environmental issues facing the maritime industry? And more particularly, what are you doing besides the disposal, ship disposal, what else are you doing in the area of environmental protection to reduce the impact by the industry on the environment?
Well, the ship disposal program is probably a good example of what we can do to set the example and the way that we maintain our fleets to do what's best for the environment and frankly, the right thing to do. And we know that the right thing to do is not to kind of, dig in and fight with the local regulators, sure, but actually to work with the communities and make sure that there's a good understanding of what we're doing. And we can listen to it and to new ideas as well. So we're pleased to have been able to do that. We also have a very strong core environmental program focused more on looking for innovative ways to help tackle some of the industry key challenges. For instance, one of the biggest problems vexing the industry right now is the problem of invasive aquatic species. You may have heard of the zebra mussel, the problems in the Great Lakes. Right, yeah. There are many new modern environmental standards that are coming into place, whether it's the Coast Guard or EPA or the International Maritime Organization, setting very strict standards as to the treatment of ballast water. Now, a ship's ballast water, when you travel around the world, you're traveling from ecosystem to ecosystem, you know, different bioregions. And so when you take on water and all of the little creepy crawly things in it in from one area of the world and bring it to another and discharge it, you can see this is how the problems like the zebra mussel takeover occur. And so the new standards require a better treatment of that ballast water to make sure there's no living organisms in there that could do damage to a place like I'll say the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. There's so much at stake, and it's not just transportation isn't the only use of our oceans and rivers and lakes, but frankly, it is a major part of it. So we're often finding ourselves reminding folks that there's not, you can't just stop all transportation on the water. I mean, there has to be a way to work through this, to using technology that's available, that's effective, help solve the problem. And as the regulators figure out, all right, what's the appropriate level to set at, we are working to find out what's actually technologically feasible. And so we're running three different laboratories, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, and one in the Great Lakes, where we can test these technologies to see if they actually work. And we're making the results public so that when ship owners or operators, when they're evaluating the different technologies and trying to figure out what to buy for their ship, you know, they don't have to just rely on marketing claims. They can actually see what the, you know, an independent analysis will show. And this also helps the regulators as they determine, you know, what the appropriate standard will be. We'll be able to show what's actually feasible right now.
You mentioned earlier that a key strategic goal for your agency is seeking to enhance the competitiveness of U.S. transportation providers and manufacturers in the global marketplace. Would you elaborate on your multifaceted approach to improving connectivity of the U.S. marine transportation system with the global transportation system? What else needs to be done for more safer, more efficient, and cost-effective movement of goods?
Well, let me answer that a couple of ways. Number one, when we look to make U.S. companies more competitive in the world market, one of the things we do is work with our partners internationally to try and tear down market barriers and get better access for our companies who want to be more competitive or participate in these markets overseas. So we'll interface directly with counterparts from key maritime and shipping companies. I meet every year with my counterparts from China. We are working with governments from Vietnam. Last year, I had the opportunity to visit, you know, key dignitaries in Denmark, Greece, and a lot of the, again, some of the big, you know, shipping countries or markets. Brazil is another one I visited with the secretary last year, and we got to discuss a number of maritime issues. So we have a very robust international program. In fact, there's a group of nations that often consult together, most of the European countries that we meet with biannually as well. So there is regular, healthy communication. We bring in the U.S. industry as well into these discussions where appropriate. We make sure we hear from them. We make sure we're pushing where we can and make progress where we can as well. The second part of this, I would say that, you know, to try and make maritime better connected to the U.S. transportation system probably occurs right there at the port. And ports have kind of naturally flourished in our country in ways that have let them kind of sustain themselves or survive over long periods of time. You know, all of our major cities have kind of grown up and built around the seaports. And that's, I guess, you know, expected. The challenge now is that if you're trying to expand a port or access to that port, usually you've got a lot of urban kind of growth right around it. And so there are competing interests when it comes to development of some of these industrial properties. People who really want to have access right next to the port for a warehouse, for instance, are competing with, you know, the developer wants to build condos and that could probably charge a lot more money for them. So there's often that, you know, those tough decisions that the local communities have to make, but it has an effect on the entire, you know, supply chain. So we want to make sure we're working with ports to so they can understand some of these challenges and how that we can help share some of the best practices. For the first time ever, the Secretary of Transportation, Ray LaHood, last year assembled all of the nation's port directors and held the first ever port summit, which we followed up again this year with. And I know we'll continue to do because it really does provide a healthy discussion for what are the current challenges that many of the ports are facing and give, you know, access as well to some of our key decision makers when it comes to developing our nation's transportation policy. But one of the probably the biggest challenges is that because ports have never really needed, you know, they've always had their own sources of revenue. They could charge for, you know, whether it's leasing out terminal space or putting charges on goods coming into their port. They've never really needed the revenues that state departments of transportation have. So the planning process between ports and state DOTs has never been as coordinated as it should be. In fact, I've meet with many state officials, and there are very few state departments of transportation that even have a maritime office or a port office or even a freight office. And so it's very difficult sometimes to you know, try and get the focus of a state DOT to be anything, you know, other than highway focused or just looking at kind of residential pothole type issues or, you know, the needs of, you know, many of the people, whereas somebody's got a plan for the freight movements as well, because they certainly impact all of us and everybody else who uses the transportation system.
So another thing I wanted to talk to you about was developing future leaders, and it's critical for your agency. Can you talk to me a little bit about the efforts you're pursuing to succession planning and executive development?
Absolutely. And the Maritime Administration, you know, one of the challenges I had when I walked in the door, we did a survey and found that very quickly I asked our senior staff to raise their hand if they're eligible to retire. Every single one of them raised their hand. We did a survey within the agency and said, you know, how many are eligible to retire in the next 5 years? Well, a third of the agency was eligible to retire in 5 years. And so that really poses a challenge when you're trying to develop some sort of a succession strategy. So with a fairly senior agency like we had, we really need to struggle to plan ahead. What that means is that we have to take a close look when somebody leaves the agency. Are we backfilling at the same grade, or are we looking to develop a less experienced person and let them grow into that role so that we have kind of a smoother transition and a longer period of which we can help grow new leaders for the agency?
Do you have any special programs that you're pursuing in particular around executive development or mentorship?
Mentoring is one that we highly encourage. And I know I have a mentee as well as a mentor, several mentors, and I can't speak highly enough to those types of programs.
So actually, it's a good segue into what's your approach to empowering your employees? What are you doing to foster results-oriented performance culture within your agency?
Well, a number of things. For instance, one of the key challenges I found when I walked in the door is that the agency had always long been known for its kind of informality. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that, you know, pretty much anybody could walk into the administrator's office and say, "Hey, I've got an issue here. I've got a problem." We still encourage that, but we also try to develop a more formal kind of decision-making process so that at least these issues have been teed up, you know, before somebody comes to me, you know, "Well, all right, have you talked to the lawyers? You know, is this legal to do, or do we have the money for this? You know, did you talk to the budget people, the CFO?" Those are the kinds of things that I want to make sure are done so that there's a smoother decision-making process at the agency, but also most effectively use everybody's resources and time. I found time is one of the most precious commodities as a leader that you have.
What does the future hold for the U.S. Maritime Administration? We will ask its administrator, David Matsuda, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.